We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tell Sean Payton, keep talking that shit. We gonna see him soon. You feel me?
Welcome to another edition of the Butting Heads podcast on Rams Talk Radio, proud part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network and sponsored by TickPick, the original no-fees ticket purchasing website. If you're looking to get some tickets to see these incredible 5-1 Los Angeles Rams, TickPick.com is your place to go. I'm here with Johnny Gomez. Johnny, another week, another win for the Los Angeles Rams, this time over the New York Giants, and which is becoming a recurring theme of us beating the Giants. I could not be happier about it. How you doing, man?
I mean, it's always nice to score a huge win over any team. And while the Giants are a depleted Giants team that wasn't very good to begin with, I'm happy about the win. I mean, essentially limited them to just 3 points, so I couldn't be happier.
I went to the game. I went to the last three Rams games at MetLife Stadium. The last two have been gigantic blowouts. Man, it's been incredible. It has been so great to walk into that stadium and just watch us absolutely wreck the other team with no regard. This game, it was the 10th anniversary celebration of the 2011 championship team. So they got to trot out their 10-year-old team down 28-3 at halftime. Good for them. Feel good moment. Everybody left the game afterwards. It was great. It was incredible.
Yeah, I bet as someone that you know lives near the area of the New York teams, I imagine that you see a lot of overhype with New York teams each year. Am I right?
Oh yeah. Although, well, even Jet fans, although they've gotten a little more self-aware at this point. I felt a little bad for the Giants fans that were there because it was just so hopeless. But also, they fluked into two Super Bowls, and that 2011 team really was not that good. So I don't feel bad for them because that year was a fucking gift and they could have it. They could have it, all right? This is karma for getting a fluke Super Bowl. Not one, but two. Although I'll give them more credit for the 2007 one because of who they beat to get there. The Giants, man. The Giants. All right, well, before we get into the game, there were some injuries in this game. This is coming out Tuesday morning, recording Monday night. As per usual, I am tilting during this fantasy football night with a lot of big players playing tonight. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not watching the game. No distractions for me tonight. actually going to flip my phone over so I don't see the notification when dumbass Cole Beasley scores a touchdown and ruins my night. I know he already scored one. I hope he doesn't score another. Two players injured in this game, out for the season, unfortunately. Johnny Munn tore his ACL, third time in his career. Real bummer. Stinks for him. Sucks for the team. He's a fairly important part of the team. And Jake Funk also with an injury that will keep him out for the season as well. He tore his hamstring. Also hurt in this game. Apparently everyone got hurt. Sony Michel hurt his shoulder, but he's expected to play this week. John Wolford hurt his neck, but isn't expected to miss any time and more than likely won't be needed next week, although he did play a little in this game. Let's start with Munt, the biggest loss here for sure. Second string tight end, plays a lot in two tight end sets. I would imagine, and I don't think we've played a ton of... Yeah, we haven't played a ton of 12 personnel this season anyways with two tight ends. I would imagine Bryson Hopkins steps up into his role, which is not, you know, ideal, but I don't think we're going to see a second tight end a lot here anyways. The obvious choice would be Jacob Harris, but given what Johnny Munt does, which is basically just blocks, I don't really see them putting Harris in that role, even though he's a much more sexy option than Bryson Hopkins. But ultimately, it's a loss that's going to hurt the team a little, and I feel for him. I hope he recovers. I hope he can come back. But I would imagine this just provokes McVay to really just eliminate 12 personnel almost altogether from the playbook.
Yeah, absolutely, because Johnny Munt offers a lot more than people realize. And kind of gives McVay that flexibility. But the problem is neither Jacob Harris Bryson Hopkins. There we go. Wow. It's been that long since the preseason. So, neither Jacob Harris or Bryson Hopkins is really that kind of a tight end to begin with. You know, this is a guy, or, you know, these guys were basically drafted for their pass catching skills. And yeah, you know, they're going to try and mold them to be better blockers in a way, sort of like Tyler Higbee. At least Higbee had a little more blocking prowess coming out of, you know, college. But to say that they're going to replace Johnny Munt, maybe as a body, and that's pretty much it if they ever do that. It does kind of take a little bit away from the Rams offense, but as Steve mentioned, you know, this wasn't really the type of sets that the Rams were accustomed to like they were last year. You know, this was kind of more of a bigger blow towards last year's offense where they really needed that to keep, you know, Jared Goff safe. And this year it's not as well needed. So still it is a loss nonetheless, because that just takes away part of the Rams offensive scheme that, you know, they could have had, would have liked to have had. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, Munt played 29% of the snaps week one, 5% week two, 48% week three, 29% week four, and 42% week five. Only played three snaps last week. Obviously got hurt, though. But they weren't rolling him out a ton before he did. So it is a loss. You know, anyone who would come on the podcast and say this is going to really be a detriment to the team, I mean, no disrespect to Johnny Munt, it's not going to be, but it will take away some things they could do on offense. It'll be interesting to see if they do continue to use 12 personnel and try either Hopkins or Harris, or dare I even say Kendall Blanton off the practice squad out there in those formations. But it's certainly something they could weather. You know, if they were able to weather the loss of Cam Akers, I think they'll be able to weather the loss of Johnny Munt. He was targeted once in 6 weeks. So that reason gives me a lot of pause if anyone says Jacob Harris is going to step up, because that man played wide receiver last year. There's no way I would be floored if he steps in and is a remotely reliable blocking tight end. Jake Funk, as you mentioned, torn hamstring, done for the year. Been returning some kicks. I'm sure they'll fill in Tutu or somebody else back there on those. Rams, and we have two running backs on the roster now, and Sony Michel's banged up, so maybe we'll see Javon Hawkins or Buddy Howell off the practice squad. Maybe we'll see them at a bet in free agency. I don't know what Xavier Jones's health is, but maybe they look into bringing him back. We'll see. Too much to talk about to sit here and go on a diatribe about Jake Funk's replacement.
Let's talk about some football. But before we do, Johnny, I just want to say, man, this was my first game back since the pandemic began. My first NFL game back in a stadium, watching the Rams kick the ever-living shit out of the New York Football Giants. It was incredible, and I just want to say, man, it feels so good to be able to go back to these games. It's such a blast, and the Rams, man, they're good this year. We're going to be a Super Bowl contender. You got to get out and see this team play, and if you're looking to acquire tickets to go watch this team, go find Rams tickets. The best place to do it is TickPick, TickPick. It's the original no-fee ticket site. Everyone hates those fees. You have no idea what they mean. TickPick, they're not even going to give you fees. They're going to give you the prices as is, as you're going to pay for them. It's my go-to, and it's going to be your go-to place for all NFL tickets. They offer the office service fees, other ticket charges site, and it lets them guarantee the best prices on all their NFL tickets. If you don't believe it, if you think you could go on another website, any of them, and find better prices for the same seats, TickPick will give you a 110% of the difference in your purchase price, meaning they will actually take money off their offer because you are giving them a better price, because they're so confident that it doesn't exist that you're going to get the best prices on TickPick. I mean, let's imagine going to this game, it made me so excited. And now I'm even looking at going into SoFi, flying out to LA, getting the full experience, seeing our boys play in person with all of you, with all of our fans out in the California area. And you bet if I do that, I'm going to be planning to get my tickets using TickPick, and I'll be giving you the same discount that I'm going to be using on this website. So head over to TickPick.com/RTR and use our promo code, again, RTR. That's the promo code, just the three letters. You're going to save $10 on your first pair of Rams tickets on TickPick. And as we know, the Rams are 5-1, and they're going to keep winning. They're going to never lose another game, so you're going to want to be in attendance for all of these wins down the pipeline. Avoid getting screwed, quite frankly, on these hidden ticket fees, and get the best price you possibly can with TickPick, TickPick. Let's talk about this game, man. 38-11, Scorigami. The first time the score has ever happened in an NFL game. Excited to witness that in person. Give me your initial thoughts on this game. Obviously, a huge blowout. This is their biggest blowout of the year, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure that's true. It's definitely true. How'd you feel, man? It was so nice to, you know, once they took that 14-3 lead midway through the second quarter, it was just like, great, the game's over. There's no way that the Giants come back.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to ask me with the first, really the first couple drives of the game, I wasn't too happy, especially because, as I mentioned earlier, the Giants weren't exactly at 100%. You know, they didn't see Saquon Barkley. They didn't see really a whole lot of their receiving squad. I mean, and that's kind of funny considering they had a plethora of receivers at the start of the season.
Yeah, they won the first quarter, which is insane to say in a game where they essentially lost 38-3.
Yeah, basically. And I think it has a lot to do with the Rams' offense starting off super slow. And that's something that Sean McVay even, you know, mentioned in his post-game interview, that, you know, they need to start off faster. They need to come out of the gates a lot quicker. I don't know if it's just, you know, Matthew Stafford trying to get into a rhythm, or even Sean McVay and his play calling needs to get more into a rhythm, because, you know, that can't happen against a terrible team like the Giants. And they do have some players on defense. I'll give credit where credit's due. But it's not, you know, this isn't the defenses the Rams have played against, you know, in the first couple weeks of the season. You know, they've played some contending defenses and looked a lot better than what they did in the first quarter of this game. So all that said, beyond that, the Rams, like, it looked like they were just playing with them at certain points of the game. You know, offense came out there. You could tell even before the starters left the field in the fourth quarter that, you know, they weren't really giving it their all, because, I mean, what was the point in running up the score? And that's basically why Wolford got in there at some point and really all the starters sat. And it looked like a preseason game out there. But, yeah, overall, that's exactly what the Rams – I feel like we saw a glimpse of what the Rams could be. And albeit it was against the Giants, and they should dominate a team like the Giants, but that's something different than what the Rams did last year. And I really want people to really pay attention to that, because, you know, a lot of people are suggesting, well, you know, this wasn't a very good team. And yeah, absolutely, 100% agree with you. But last year, the Rams would play against, you know, some terrible teams, and either it would be a lot closer than it should have been, or they would flat out lose, aka the Jets game.
Or the Giants game last year. They won 17-9. You know, the Giants were a little better last year, but they were still bad. You know, yeah, if this game, even if it was like, you know, 20-11 or whatever, you know, it would be a completely different podcast. Now, that first quarter was gross. It was unbelievable that they lost that quarter. They could not move the ball at all on offense. And the Giants are pesky. You know, they're similar to Detroit, where we play next week. You know, they've had some games this year where, you know, they've stuck around and been a, you know, been like a, what, been a gnat to their opponent. Can find the bug I was trying to throw out there. But like, they're still bad. They're still bad. And, you know, you mentioned all the injuries they have had. Kadarius Toney on that first drive was obliterating us. And I think there's a 0% chance we would have lost had he continued to play the game, but there is a good chance that their offense would have scored quite a bit more points if he was out there, considering he was their whole offense on that first drive. Some concerning things, mainly on the defensive side of the ball early in this game, but it's nice to see, you know, when things aren't going well, that the team could flip the switch like they did. And a lot of it was the Giants just handing us the ball multiple times in the second quarter. But to the team's credit, the offense scored a lot of points. The defense, when easy takeaways were presented to them, made the plays, caught the interceptions. You know, the Giants dropped some interceptions in this game. Jamal Adams clip on Twitter of a ball just hitting him in the face has been trending. That could have been a pick for them that he didn't get. It's great to see. You know, it's great to see after the first quarter, the Giants were winning basically for the first third of this game, and as soon as the Rams took the lead, the game was a fucking joke. It was an absolute shit show for the Giants. The Rams scored 28 points in basically a 10-minute stretch in the second quarter, which is just preposterous. That was never something this team could have done last year, even against bad opponents like the Giants. I mean, like you said, they lost to the goddamn Jets. So it's great to see. And to me, like, this game summed up in a nutshell was the play where Matthew Stafford fumbled the snap, picked it up, was still able to throw a screen pass, and it went for like 35 yards. It was not the Giants' day after that first quarter, and it's nice that we are on the good end. This is a very good team beating a bad team. This is how it should be. This is how the game should have went.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of the things, too, that I was really really impressed with overall was how particularly the secondary adjusted You know, because obviously the defense as a whole, you know, allowed the Giants to drive the ball downfield on their first drive. Was not happy to see that, especially on the ground. You know, that's not something you want to see. But overall, like you said, they adjusted. They were really dominant pretty much the entire game until, you know, they went into garbage time and basically put in all the backups. So, you know, I have to say I was really, really impressed with how the secondary, you know, really evolved. And you know, considering that, yeah, Jalen Ramsey's going to do his thing, that's fine. But without the services of Darius Williams, that's a big concern. And then you essentially have, you know, guys that haven't been doing well all season long. And, you know, guys like David Long and a rookie in Robert Rochelle, Dante Dayon got promoted from the practice squad that game. So there wasn't a lot to be confident at. And I think there would have been, you know, a little bit of a struggle had, you know, the Giants wide receivers been healthy. And not to say it would have affected the outcome of the game, because I don't think so. But I do think it would have been a much tougher time, because secondary was a little bit is a little bit banged up right now. And then, of course, you know, they were using Terrell Burgess a lot, which is, you know, really any sort of action that he's seen all season. So there's a lot to really take in there.
Well, Terrell Burgess started and then basically didn't play. So yeah. I think he played that first drive and they must have felt like they'd seen enough and just not played him for the rest of the game. I had the snap counts up. I'll pull them up again. But even before I hit those, what was my turn of thought? Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree. The secondary, they got toasted on that first drive quite a bit. Robert Rochelle in particular seemed like he was getting picked on. He almost had a costly pass interference in the end zone, but they call it, it was pass interference, but they ruled the ball uncatchable, which was correct. Giants settled for a field goal, didn't score for the next like 40 minutes. But yeah, no, they took a beating on that first drive, and granted, Kadarius Toney got hurt, but you know, when you are a secondary that has Jalen Ramsey in it and you're going against a group of receivers who three out of the four best receivers, and I would say at least the two best in Toney and Galladay were not playing in this game, and you have Jalen Ramsey in your secondary, you should completely shut them down, especially with how well the pass rush played in this game, who was unbelievable. They were destroying Daniel Jones. You should dominate, and they did. After that first, really that first drive, you know, the first quarter in a sense to a lesser extent, it was really just that first drive where they took a beating and they picked it back up. Dante Dayon, yeah, like you said, coming off the practice squad, playing basically the whole game, Robert Rochelle playing basically the whole game, Taylor Rapp playing great. We haven't said that in God knows how long. A genuinely great game, maybe the best game he's ever had, two interceptions, even had a quarterback pressure, which was awesome to see. You know, it was encouraging, and I know, yeah, we could sit here and say these receivers are bad on the other team with a bad quarterback. Dayon and Rochelle, and even to a lesser extent, you know, Rapp and Fuller don't have a ton of real, like, in-game experience. Rapp and Fuller obviously have a decent amount, but not, you know, they're not like seasoned vets out there. And Rochelle and Dayon have barely played NFL ball. We didn't get to say this on the pod last week when Darius Williams went down with an injury, because we podded right after the game and didn't pod for the rest of the week. When you have this game and then the Lions and then the Texans, three in a row, bad quarterbacks, bad receiving cores, bad offenses, figure your shit out. You know, try things like let Terrell Burgess play and it didn't work out. Okay, pull him. Let Dante Dayon play, see what happens. Oh, it's working out. Okay, we can keep him on the field. He can be an asset, unlike Burgess apparently and David Long, as we learned, who barely played in this game until the fourth quarter. It's, you know, this is a perfect opportunity to get right in this stretch, starting with this game, into next week with Detroit, and into the following week with Houston. We're going to play some really good teams with good quarterbacks, good receiving cores. Tennessee's on the horizon. You know, these guys are going to have to be relied on, especially with Williams out. Jalen Ramsey can't guard anybody. And it was just nice to see, yeah, like you said, it was really nice to see them rebound, adjust, and play well. And effectively just shut down an offense. These are not the best players in the NFL, but they are NFL players at least.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that you're absolutely right. This is the time to kind of mix and match who plays well together, who has a better chance of making plays. Because yeah, I mean, as we saw on the first drive with Terrell Burgess, there's something up with him. He's not performing to expectations. I don't know. He's still very young, so we'll see how he develops. Last season, he started off strong, but he didn't really play much of the season because of injury. So it's not fair to kind of give up on him just yet. So I do think that maybe it might be time to, you know, let him play when it's garbage time like they did. And the same goes with David Long. You know, unfortunately, David Long hasn't really progressed to the guy that we were hoping he could be. But also, young guy, maybe a little more in-game action will help him out.
Nah, they're done with David Long. If this game tells you anything, it's that they're completely done with him. They started Terrell Burgess. They took him out, and then they put in Dante Dayon, who didn't even make the fucking team. They are definitely done with David Long for this season, I think. I would be shocked if, barring injuries, he plays a meaningful role on the team for the rest of the season.
Oh, no. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think that his starting days might be done, considering injuries and all that. But I do think that they shouldn't give up on him just yet, just because, I mean, honestly, the depth on the Rams is not that great. So maybe a little more in-game action and garbage time. And let's face it, if all goes according to plan, you know, the next couple weeks, I think there'll be plenty of garbage time there. So I think as long as they do it at appropriate times, getting him more in-game action for David Long and Terrell Burgess, I think would go a long way.
Yeah, well, it would, but I don't know if we're going to get it. You know, we'll see, maybe in this Detroit game, maybe in this Houston game. But, you know, if they like Dayon and they like Rochelle and those are their guys, I want them to get all the snaps and get the reps. If those are the guys they're going to put their trust in. I don't care who it is as long as they play okay. And hopefully, you know, this is a good 3-game stretch to be missing Williams, and hopefully we can get him back after. I'm not counting on it until really late in the season, but hey, we'll see what happens. Last thing in the secondary, I feel like a lot of people after this Taylor Rapp game, who played phenomenal, he played incredible, and I hope he continues to keep it up. You know, for him especially, he could really use these games just to really just dominate and let people know that he can contribute on this team and in this league. A lot of people were taking this game as like a victory lap, saying like he's always been good and like clowning people for saying he's not good. Pump the fucking brakes on that. He's been bad this season. Okay, I hope that this is the new norm, that he's really good and becomes a really good player and the guy that we thought he would be after his rookie season. But that would be like if Brian Allen puts up a stinker next week and we came on this podcast and said, oh, he was never good. Like, that's bullshit. He's playing great this year. He's allowed to have a bad game. Similarly to how if Taylor Rapp has a good game, that doesn't mean that the bad games didn't happen. Like, I don't know why we need to act like, oh, yeah, we always believed he was always good. Like, he wasn't good. And like, he was having a terrible year. But I hope this is the norm. I'm optimistic. Because we have seen him be good in the past, but before this game, it had been a while where we saw a really good Taylor Rapp game.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I think partially one of the nice things to see was, yeah, when the Rams drafted Taylor Rapp, it was kind of known that his coverage skills were kind of so-so, you know, not the greatest. But one of the things about Taylor Rapp was that, you know, he was missing tackles. He wasn't the Taylor Rapp that we had seen in his rookie season. And, you know, obviously last year he didn't get a ton of time at safety. So the way I look at it is like this. It looked like the former Taylor Rapp that we had seen in his rookie season and had so much promise. He's a young guy and someone that has a tremendous amount of potential, and that's something to look forward to and hopefully he can develop into. But to sit here and suggest that this is the safety that he's always been, that he's a dominant safety, yeah, you need to relax a little bit. You know, keep in mind that the Rams did play the Giants, not a very good offense, an injured offense that wasn't very good to begin with. And on top of that, you know, some of those interceptions, I mean, Daniel Jones, sometimes he was pressured, sure, but there were other times I'm like, what the hell was he throwing at?
Yeah, he's bad.
Yeah. And also, I have to say, I kind of mentioned this to Steve over the weekend, that I kind of think he looks, you know, both physically and the way how he plays, like Eli Manning.
Yes, kind of, but he has shown no flashes. He's like, I feel like he hasn't shown any flashes. Like, the team is bad. The coaching staff might be bad. They've been destroyed with injuries. But barring like an act of God for the rest of the season, I cannot imagine they bring this dude back as their starting quarterback. I would be absolutely floored. He's been bad.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of teams, you know, going after quarterback this season. So,
yeah. Yeah, and it's a bad quarterback class from what I've heard. I know nothing about the draft, so maybe, but I think they would look for a free agent before they bring him back, or at least do what the Broncos did and bring in a Teddy Bridgewater-esque player to compete with him and probably win the job because he's bad.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
I guess last thing on the defense, the pass rush was unbelievable in this game. Now, again, it's Giants, but they absolutely dominated that Giants offensive line. Four players got in on sacks. Leonard Floyd with a sack and a half. Terrell Lewis had a sack. Oboe had a sack. And Aaron Donald had half a sack. If I'm doing the math right now correctly on the fly, seven players had quarterback hits. The guys who had a sack, obviously, plus Greg Gaines, Taylor Rapp, did I miss somebody? Jameer Jones even getting in there. This was an incredible game. Terrell Lewis and Oboe particularly, guys who played great that we've been waiting on, even though they both played well or Terrell Lewis especially has played well in recent weeks. But those guys have arrived, man. It seems like this position was a concern entering the year, and with these two dudes plus Justin Hollins when he comes back around Leonard Floyd, it's a solid rotation of edge rushers. You know, it is not the best edge rush rotation in the league, but it is a very good rotation of edge rushers if these guys can keep it up.
And I think a lot of that has to do with Raheem Morris. This was a guy that, you know, absolutely loved to blitz. And I think for a blitzing specialist like Raheem Morris, he's going to get the most out of, you know, these young pass rushers. And that's certainly good to see. And, you know, maybe they're not the best in the league, but you know, this is exactly, you know, what we were hoping for. Because let's face it, I think any one of us would be lying if we said, I knew that this pass rush was going to be like this. Because, you know, outside linebacker, other than maybe Leonard Floyd, it was a big question mark. Who was going to step up? And then it ended up being Justin Hollins, who nobody really expected to be the starter until, I mean, I know he was kind of used more frequently than we expected last season, but we totally expected, you know, guys like Terrell Lewis or Oboe to step up and claim that spot, and neither did. So it's good to see that there's a lot of confidence in this unit, especially because there are a lot of flaws in the defense compared to last season. You know, there was a lot of loss, and the fact that they can, you know, improve in an area that maybe wasn't the strongest last season, that's special. I give props to Raheem Morris there.
Yeah, man, it's awesome to see. And I think Terrell Lewis is going to be a really good player who's coming on into his own. You know, he was a day two draft pick, so it's not like there's no draft capital there. And then, you know, Oboe seems like he'll be a more than reliable pass rusher in the rotation, even with Hollins back. You love to see it, man. The concerns on this defense are getting less and less, I think, especially there. But, you know, we will see. I will say, don't really make any real assessments about the secondary and the linebacking core that we've been concerned about until at least week 9, when we start playing real teams again. These teams are not good for the next 2 weeks and in this game. Offensively, it was a weird day, I guess. You know, in a game where they scored 38 points, they only had 365 total yards compared to 261 for the Giants. But, you know, they won. It was rough at the beginning. They started out, that was a really, really sloppy first quarter offensively. They went 3-and-out on their second drive. And then their third drive, they get backed up to a was it the first drive? The third drive? Yeah, they get backed up to a 1st and 21. And then go 6 plays down the field and score. And that was it. From there, the Giants continued to give us the ball. And to the Rams' offense's credit, who has struggled a little bit in the red zone touchdown-wise, they scored 21 points off of turnovers in this game. The only turnover they didn't capitalize on from the Giants, who had 4 turnovers, was they got an interception with 17 seconds left, and Cooper Kupp dropped a pass that resulted in interception. Time expired, so the Giants did not score on it. Only point Giants had off of turnovers this game was that they scored off of John Wolford's fourth quarter interception, which we do not need to talk about for our birthday boy over there, John Wolford. But, you know, even with a weird first quarter, it was nice to see Stafford, and he did this against Tampa Bay too, came out the gate struggling. He took a few sacks in the first quarter, and they were not, you know, I felt like on those 2 sacks, he had enough time to get rid of the ball, and he didn't. And it is what it is. It was a tough first quarter. But after that, I mean, he finished this game 22 of 28, 251 yards, 4 touchdowns, and an interception, as you mentioned, not really his fault, and wasn't sacked after that first quarter. I mean, there's not really anything to complain about offensively. They need to sharpen it up, but I don't really know. Like, we can't really, like, there's some mistakes in the first quarter against a better team that could have resulted in us getting buried into an early hole. But they certainly played well enough in this game and then some to get us a blowout victory here.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying for sure. And, you know, and to be perfectly honest with you, I totally agree that there isn't a whole lot to complain about offensively. I do think that there is still work to be done, though, particularly with some of the I would say mostly in the passing game, because on the ground, I mean, Darrell Henderson did his thing.
Oh, he looks great, dude.
He really
did.
He
looked great.
He looked like a legitimate top 10 running back. You could even make an argument for a little bit higher, but I think top 10 is probably the fairest thing. Yeah, he looked like a badass out there, point blank. And Sonny Michel did a solid job as a compliment to him. And I think that's exactly what you want to be at. And in that regard, I don't think there's really much to complain about. In the passing game, I do think that there's still work to be done there. Matthew Stafford had a hell of a game still. You know, he did his thing, you know, where when it counted. There are still a lot of ill-advised passes that he made, some of which weren't his fault per se, but there was a few passes where I left scratching my head like, what? And particularly the ones that were nowhere near the receivers, and that last ill-advised pass at the at halftime, the interception, that was frustrating because that was essentially the same type of pass that that he threw against the Seahawks, where it was kind of carelessly thrown and, you know, ended up becoming an interception. Now, I realize that nothing came of it. It was an interception, so no big deal, right? It ended at halftime, so what's the problem? Well, the problem is that's becoming a habit now. If it happened once, okay, you learn from it. If it happens again, there's a pattern there. You know, you got to be safer with the football because against better teams, that they're going to make you pay. And let's face it, it's the Giants. So, of course, not much happened there. It is something to keep an eye on. Maybe it's an overreaction of sorts, but I don't think so, man.
No, he's been a little reckless for sure. And a lot of these games, you know, we've been able to afford it because the teams aren't that good. But it's nice to see them playing aggressive, but you got to be careful. You can't give the ball away. And, you know, that Seattle interception was insanity. I didn't see anything as egregious as that in this game, but he didn't look too sharp in the first quarter. And look, man, you play the Giants, you play the Lions, you play the Texans, odds are you're going to be fine no matter what you do. If you miss a couple of balls here and there, it's no big deal as long as you hit a couple. But when we get to the playoffs, man, when we play the Ravens later in the season, when we play the Cardinals again, when we play the Packers, you got to be sharp, man. You can't afford to turn the ball over. And I'm not concerned about Stafford really at all, but I hope that he is, you know, taking notes of these things. And it was encouraging to see in McVay's press conference after the game, you know, he was disappointed with how the offense played, even though it was a blowout win. But yeah, like he's holding them accountable. You know, you a lot of times it's easy to come in out of this game and say there's nothing the team did wrong. They won the game by a billion points on the road in a way different time zone. But look, man, you gotta take inventory after games like this, and you know, make sure you're not just writing it off as a blowout win when there are things the team could improve on. Even though you certainly feel good coming out of this game, ending up 5-1 on the road in New York, like yeah, you feel great. But yeah, no, I'm with you. He's got to get a little sharper for this team to play into February. We talked about Henderson, incredible, 21 carries, 78 yards and a touchdown, added two receptions for 29 yards and a touchdown on a beautiful wheel route, or not even a wheel route. You know, John, I had to take note of this because finally, you know, they always trot the running back out wide when they run empty and they never look at him because why would they? Finally, Darrell Henderson runs a go route and they throw it to him, and he scores a touchdown. I give them credit. You know, even if it didn't work, I give them credit for actually looking at the running back in that formation so that in the future, defenses might not be able to just trot a linebacker out there like the Giants did. They'll actually have to respect that formation.
Yeah, I mean, finally worked. I think there's hope for this play in the future. I mean, hey, it worked consecutive weeks, right?
It at least It keeps him honest, keeps the defense honest. Cooper Kupp in this game, it's kind of entering Aaron Donald territory where what do we even say about him? 9 catches, 130 yards, 2 touchdowns. Not only he will almost certainly be in the Pro Bowl for the first time in his career, very much trending towards a first-team All-Pro selection, which is not something you take lightly in the NFL. That's a huge deal. Be hard to, you know, consider anyone else for the top spot on that team right now at the wide receiver position. I'm not going to sit here and say he's more talented pound for pound than guys like Tyreek Hill and Davante Adams, but he's certainly, at this point, a top 10, possibly top 5 receiver in the NFL, and he's playing like the top 1 receiver. That touchdown that he had on 4th and 1 out of fucking empty formation on 4th and 1. I will give the mad lad Sean McVay credit there. I've been ragging that stupid shit all season, but they had an incredible touchdown, pass and catch, Stafford to Kupp out of empty on 4th and 1. Not even on the 1-yard line. They could have just gotten a yarding on the first down. So even more insane to run empty in that situation. But it worked, and it was a beautiful catch. Man, he's so good. Kupp is so good. Really, he's taken a leap, and he's an elite receiver in this league. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it right now.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's like, what else do you even say about him? Johnny, before we talk about the future and Detroit, I'm going to ring some bells here in my my sound effects in the pod that you can't hear. I got lightning. The unthinkable happened. The unthinkable happened in this game. For the first time since 2019, the Rams dialed up a fake punt. We haven't seen this since John Fossil left 2 fucking years ago. The Rams finally dial it up. It works. There's some like ghost penalty. Go on Rams Wire. They had an article about what they thought that penalty was. It was basically like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's some like archaic rule that you can't have a player too close to the sidelines. I don't know how it resulted in an offsetting penalty. I get what the call was, I guess, for the Rams. But they dialed up a fake punt. It worked. And like I just said with the play to Darrell Henderson, now defenses have to account for that once again, because they at least revealed, hey, this is still in our playbook. You know, it didn't count on the scoreboard, but it certainly made me happy to see it. I really stood up and started cheering when they did that at the game. I was very excited. Happy that Hecker can still throw the ball, because if you watched Steam for the last 2 years, you wouldn't know it.
Well, it was nice to see him out there and actually utilizing Ben Skoranek. It makes me feel like it wasn't a wasted roster space. But, yeah, they actually made that happen, and I'm still scratching my head on that penalty. And it was, I think what makes it more frustrating is that the non-clarification afterwards. And I think that they explained it to Sean McVay, but Sean McVay, you know, took the higher road and not criticized the penalty. But it was such a bizarre flag. And even like the Rams wire explanation is kind of a guess.
They haven't cleared it up.
Yeah, they still haven't said anything about it. And there was no players mentioned. It's literally a ballpark guess, because there's nothing anybody saw, at least on TV. I don't know if you noticed anything in person, Steve.
Dude, I had no idea what I couldn't see anything in person, like on that play. And they didn't show any replays because what would they show? Yeah, it was crazy. And I guess the rule that people think is what they called is that, offensive players, I guess, are not allowed to line up within 5 yards of the bench or like linger around the sideline. Because it's that schoolyard bullshit play. We've all done it playing like pickup football where like somebody acts like they're off the field and then just like runs a go route and you throw them the ball because the defense doesn't notice he's out there. But even if that's the case, what did the Giants do?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how is it offsetting? Like, if that's the case, what the hell did the Giants do? And it was all in the offsetting penalties. Like, there was nothing on the broadcast. They didn't find anything, did they? They didn't attribute the penalty to any players.
No, there was no players mentioned. It's literally a big mystery as to what this penalty actually was for, what both penalties were for, really. So it's a shame because it was such a great play by Johnny Hecker. I'm still at a loss for words. You know, I remember actually, rewinding to see, well, maybe I missed something and I just didn't notice. And, you know, after rewinding it a couple times, I still don't know what the hell this penalty is for.
Yeah.
So I guess it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, but it's a little disappointing because I think Johnny Hecker should have, gotten credited for, you know, an awesome play.
Yeah, and I still stand by the fact that our complaining about the refs' cards are still revoked. We're still not allowed to play them until something close to as bad as what happens in the NFC Championship happens to us. Hopefully it doesn't ever. But I will not spend too much time complaining about this. It's more confusion than complaining, honestly. I just want to know, like, I want to hear from the league what the explanation is and why I'm more curious about what the Giants did. Like, it's so confusing. But yeah, it was, like you said, great to see Hecker make a nice play. Great to see Ben Skoranek get in on some action. At least they still do it. We will give them a pass on Cooper Kupp returning punts again because they won by a lot. Not worth our time today. Although, Jesus Christ!
I mean, for one of the best wide receivers in football, I would still like him not to return punts.
And again, like if he was like Tyreek Hill or DeSean Jackson in his prime back there returning punts, hell, fucking yeah, go for it. He's really not good at it. You know, he finally actually fielded a punt today, or in this game, and like, he doesn't have, you know, he's not slow by any means. He's a fast player, but he doesn't have the, like, immediate burst to be a dangerous punt returner.
Like, he's no DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, no, like, he can't catch the ball and just start darting. You know, he's not slow, but he's also not he's not DeSean Jackson, Tyreek Hill, even in theory, Tutu Atwell, that kind of player where they're just they can dust you immediately as they start moving. Tavon Austin, even kind of back in the day in that category. Let's talk about Detroit a little bit. That's who we play this week. They are the worst team in the NFL record-wise. They're 0-6. They had a string of, you know, heartbreaking losses followed up this week by a throttling at the hands of the who did they play? The Bengals, you know, aren't particularly good. Before we even get into the golf of it all, we shouldn't look past this team because they have been playing teams tough, and they've really had some heartbreaking losses to the Ravens and the Vikings, who are, you know, the Ravens are good, legitimately good, and the Vikings are pretty good. So you can't, we can't sit here and say, oh, this should be a absolute another 38-11 win. But you know, if they lose this game, it's probably going to be our fault if we lose this game.
Oh yeah, there's no question. I do think that the Lions have some, you know, good players on the team. More so on the defensive side of the ball, but even offensively, they have a few players. But at no point do I think that they should beat the Rams. Maybe the Rams don't dominate them like they dominated the Giants, because, you know, while I do think the Giants are technically the better team on paper when they're healthy, that's just it, when they're healthy. So I suspect that the Lions might be a little bit more of a challenge, and I do think that Jared Goff is going to try like hell to prove himself, especially this week. So that being said, there better not be at any point a doubt in my mind that the Rams have a possibility to lose this game. They're a much better team than the Lions, let's face it. But there's always that risk. I mean, ever since the Jets beat the Rams last year, I can't overlook any opponent anymore.
The Lions currently are better than the Jets were going into that game. Like, unquestionably. But they are one of the worst offenses in the league. They're certainly not a great defense either, although, you know, they've held the Vikings and the Ravens, two good teams, to under 20 points. But they also just got throttled by Zach Taylor's Bengals. So they got throttled by Sean McVay light. Now they got to play against Sean McVay heavy. They have some players in offense. You know, they have a good tight end, a really good running back, and arguably a worse receiving core than what we played against the Giants last week after Kadarius Toney got hurt, which is an incredible statement, but I think it's true, because Sterling Shepard is way better than anyone they're trotting out there right now. And the quarterback, Jared Goff, is currently playing, you know, as one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the NFL. Guy we're very familiar with, and if you guys are going to this game, I hope you give him a little cheer when he trots out there, man. He did a lot for this franchise. But safe to say that we are in a better place. And as much as he has to prove in this game, I think Sean McVay is going to make it a point to exploit every single one of the weaknesses he knows this guy has. And I don't think he's going to play well. I really think that they are going to just obliterate this offense. Although I will say, for what we know are some of the weaknesses on this defense, DeAndre Swift could cause a lot of problems for us. I think the real one concern in this game is that they could throw the ball to him a shitload. You know, Goff loves throwing short. He's going to love throwing to this guy in this game. They could run it with him. I think it'll be effective. I am a little scared about that. And I think he could carve us up, and it would open up a lot of concerns about this defense that we've talked about in previous pods. But overall, am I concerned about this game? No, not at all. Like you said, the Jets game, you get a little lingering concern, but I'm not very worried. And somehow I don't think that this is going to be the worst team we play during this three-game stretch. I think Houston's worse.
Cough, TJ Hawkinson.
He's good too.
I'm actually more nervous about Hawkinson than I am Swift.
It's not unreasonable, but I think Hawkinson is good. I don't know if he'll be a tight end in the same caliber as like Kittle and Kelsey and Waller are, but I think he could get
it's kind of unfair to compare him to them though.
No, well, you cut me off. I think he's getting close to that, like, Mark Andrews tier, which is a group of really good tight ends. But he's hampered he's hampered, though, by his quarterback and his offense. You know, he's putting up decent numbers this year, but it could be better, and it might be better in this game. You know, the key to them performing well on offense is going to be targeting Hockenson and Swift heavily. And honestly, because there aren't really any concerns in the receiving core, I guarantee if you're listening to this podcast and you don't play fantasy football, I bet you can't name a single receiver on this team. And if you play fantasy football, you still might not be able to if you're not that into the shit like I am. I mean, Johnny, can you name their best receiver who's active right now?
Okay, are we going based off potential or by statistics?
Either.
Well, if you ask me about based on potential, I would say the rookie, Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah, there you go. He is second among the receiving core. Behind Khalif Raymond. And
I didn't know.
And Quintez Cephas is also up there after.
I thought that was their leading receiver, actually.
Yeah, no, it's Raymond. And none of those guys are particularly good. St. Brown certainly has some potential, but obviously the key for them is to heavily load up on targets for Hockenson and Swift. But I think I could see the Rams throwing Jalen Ramsey on Hockenson in this game. Because who else is he going to guard? And you know, I don't really trust, like, I think the safeties could do a decent job on Hock. I certainly don't think the linebackers would do a very good job on him. I think we'll see a little bit of Ramsey on him. And, you know, Swift, I think they can contain enough. You know, he's not going to be running deep down in the field. You know, depth of target, I would imagine, is not very high for DeAndre Swift. And Jared Goff certainly is not throwing the ball that far. He's averaging, 6.3 yards per completion? So, I mean, yards per pass attempt, sorry, not per completion. So, I don't know. We will have some big problems if they lose this game unless something catastrophic happens injury-wise. Give me a score prediction.
Ooh, that's interesting. I'm gonna say that they'll go back into the 30s. I'm gonna say 34-7.
I'm gonna say 31-10. Goff will lead a nice touchdown drive, capped off by a clutch 4-yard touchdown pass to TJ Hockenson late in the fourth quarter to narrow the gap to 21.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
This fantasy game, for those keeping score at home, really not going well. Luckily, we've entered the territory where nothing I would have done matters as Derrick Henry goes for fucking nuclear for 3 touchdowns. What are you going to do? Oh, well. All right. Well, we will be back next week, hopefully after a nice, solid Rams victory against the George Short Lions and Jared Goff. Give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't, and follow us on Twitter at Steve Ribeiro, at Johnny596, at Talk Rams, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Tell Sean Payton, keep talking that we're going to see him soon. You feel me?